Movies. We watch movies. You listen to us talk about movies that we watched without you.
It's beautiful.
Thanks. Now this is podcasting.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Super Filmscast 64. Boy, oh boy, we had a bit of a hiatus, Adam. How are you doing today?
I got snowed in.
You got snowed in?
Yeah.
Edward Snowden?
Yeah.
Is that a topical
Edward Snowden
reference?
I hit a drive in a Rubik's Cube and tossed it to the security guy.
Uh-huh.
Every time I'm on Netflix, because you know Netflix gives you approximately 1 second when you're on any title to start playing the trailer for the movie or whatever. So I've seen the beginning the trailer for Citizen 4. It's not Citizen 4. It's whatever the Joseph Gordon-Levitt one is called.
I think it's Citizen 4 or something. Yeah, you're on the right track.
I think Citizen 4 is the documentary.
Okay.
But I think it's Snowden. I think it's just Snowden. And it's just like, why did you join the FBI? And he says, because it sounded like it was cool. And then by that time, I've moved on to something else.
It is just Snowden.
But I've probably watched that like 100 times.
Okay. We also have KJ Ellis, friend of the show, friend of the network, has many podcasts on the Blowout Network. KJ, how are you doing?
I am excellent. I'm glad to be here, Trey. Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad you're here. Sorry it was sort of a weird haul trying to get you on. We had Adams up in Ohio, and he's got the blizzards.
World moves slower up there.
It does move a lot slower up there. Mm. They're still having the 2016 election up there.
Fingers crossed. I hope Michigan comes through.
See how this turns out.
So we have KJ on to do films of your life, and we'll get to that. But I want to ask you guys, what have you been watching? And KJ, in particular, what have you been watching this year as far as like new movies? KJ, go first.
New movies for me have been almost exclusively limited to random things on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I became a father for the first time this year, in July. So now with the 5-month-old, he's certainly too young to pay attention to a full movie or really anything that's on the screen. But, I really fear the existence that is like, hey, this guy once, you know, took a dump on his buddy for a viral video, and now he's like a kid's YouTube sensation. Speaking of
Blippi.
Yeah. And then like my kid being obsessed with that. So I'm like hoping I can like start with like fucking bed knobs and broomsticks or whatever, and just work through all the shit Disney movies until like my kid's like fully ready to watch like Moana at age 3.
That's not a horrible run through all the Disney stuff, you know, get into the 90s, and I'm sure you go into the past, you get a little more risky. You start getting those warning labels of, hey, this might have some bad content on here.
Social context is needed to enjoy this movie without being offended. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, great. And here are the crows in Dumbo.
Here's the Native Americans in Peter Pan.
Yeah, exactly.
Great song when I was 5. Now it's, yikes.
Is there any movie that you're kind of like excited to show your kid when they finally get old enough? Like, I know there are some people who feel that way about like Star Wars. Like, I can't wait to see that. It's going to blow their freaky minds when I finally show them Star Wars. Is there anything like that?
I mean, I mentioned Moana. That would probably be one, and that's more recent. But from my youth, I would probably say like the Ninja Turtles, you know, things like that. Like once he gets, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, like older in age, and see if I can run back like any Power Rangers or just terrible 90s, you know, nothing that says E/I in the lower right corner. Like, I can't be popping on like Bill Nye.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But probably like shit like Power Rangers, which obviously is a TV show, but hell, maybe we'll watch the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. That's probably where my brain is, and hoping that I don't have the inevitable experience of, you know, 10-year-old kid watches the Mighty Ducks hoist the Junior Pan Am Games trophy, and the kid just looks over me and is like, fuck is this, old man? Like, I know what, that's going to happen.
How did they have the graphics in the arena for the Mighty Ducks that said quack, quack?
How did they get those jerseys so quickly? In the second one, right?
Hans brought them.
Yeah. Oh, he did. I forgot about that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen them in a while. That'd be a good. That'd be a good revisit, Adam. Mighty Ducks.
They're not bad. They hold up.
D2, only D2.
Yeah, the first one. It's hard to watch either of them and not think about the meth-ridden life that Goldberg has endured since then. But the first one, you know, it's good. It's good foundation, but I agree, it's not worth stopping down for.
Well, D2, I remember, was the one where I learned about Greenland and Iceland. Was Greenland is cold.
Everybody.
Yeah. It's educational.
Yes, yeah. It's the go-to fact right. about Greenland and or Iceland.
Greenland is cold and Iceland is green.
So, right. Yeah, this year has been really, I mean, we're right in the peak of switch to streaming service that all these media companies have had. And movies have been a big part of that. And I'm throwing out generic statements there. But I think it's been interesting with the regression of movies releasing for reasons we'll dive into and the explosion of these streaming services, which were going to happen regardless or not of the pandemic. So like now everyone's experience with them has almost been like, okay, that's not enough. I would have been watching this like once a week, and now I'm like watching it every day. Like, I need more. So I wonder how the media companies are like, oh shit, they're just devouring everything. What do we do now?
Yeah, it's for me, definitely. I've watched considerably less movies this year, and I don't know if it's because I've been really been honing in on video games and getting a lot of my backlog done. I'm up to 40 beaten this year. I don't know if it's that, you know, streaming. I mean, I've been watching a lot more TV, just finished Veep, but I think these like a Mank, right? New David Fincher movie, huge David Fincher fan right here. Not watched it yet, you know, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just like this weird stigma of, well, it needs to be in the, not that I need to see the theater at all, but like, I know there's a new movie because it's in the theater and I can go and watch it just because it's on, you know, I don't know when everything's on streaming services. It's easy to find out, but I'm just not been able to keep track of what's coming out here and there. And even besides like something like Mank that's by David Fincher, like smaller movies that might come out, like your Adam, like last year, Parasite and The Lighthouse and stuff like that, where you're getting trailers and you're sort of getting a ramp up and then you go and see it. And there hasn't been that for me this year. And yeah, it's been
the
weird.
Marketing dollars have obviously been way lower for good reason. I mean, money's tight for a lot of these production studios, but it has had that weird byproduct of like, even stuff that's available and reasons to jump on these streams, like we haven't felt that motivation. I think that's likely because they haven't been in our face with it.
And I do think that, you know, while the convenience is huge to be able just to put on whatever you want immediately, there is something to kind of, at least for us who like going to theaters, like the tradition of going and you go and you block off 3 hours of time and it's something that you have kind of planned for for a few days and you know that sort of stuff, as opposed to, you know, it shows up on Netflix and you're like, oh well, maybe I'll get to it sometime, and then you just never really find the right time to work it in. I think that is some of it.
I think there's that weird like paradox of like, if you watch the same movie at home and say you watch with a significant other or whatever, and then you go back and describe your day or their take on your day, is going to be significantly like way more underwhelming. Like, oh, we sat around, we watched, you know, Parasite. I'll just use the movie you mentioned recently. Or you go watch the same movie in theaters, the same exact allotment of time, and you come right back home. You're like, oh, what'd you do today? Oh, we went to the movies. We saw this movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like that lack of experience or feeling of like accomplishment.
I love is that.
It feels way like you missing. Put on your pants. You got, you know, exactly. You went outside. You interacted with human beings and you sat in a dark room for 2 hours not speaking. That, yeah, that definitely sounds like more of an accomplishment than I sat in my room and watched this movie. With pants off. That's usually how it goes.
Well, I mean, let's just talk about it as opposed to kind of going back to this. I'll bring up the movies that I watched in a second.
Okay.
But yeah, so the big news that came out since we've been off, Warner Brothers is going to drop all of their 2021 movies on HBO Max at the exact same time as they're released in theaters. If theaters are still in existence at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Nolan is pissed. he's really mad, and you know he's kind of speaking for. So I'm sure some directors don't really care that much, but a lot of them, you know, they've been going. It's been works that have taken a while, and you know, being able to see it on the big screen is a big deal for them, and to be able to have people to say that people, you know, went out of their way to go see their movie is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now it with HBO Max, it just makes it so easy. I don't know. I think this is really, really bad news for theaters. I know I'm not breaking new ground, but it was already tough to get kind of a more casual audience to stuff outside of like big tentpole movies. And this is just going to be make it even harder for all these theaters.
Do we know what level of success? Because a couple of movies have done that this year, like, or I guess they strictly did at home, like Mulan. Disney mm-hmm. Plus just said, "Fuck it, pay us $30, watch it at home." I think Trolls earlier in the year, Trolls World Tour was like the first to do it, and I think they did $20. Right when theaters were closing. There's a Kevin Costner movie out there that did in theaters and mm-hmm. On demand, but I can't name it, so I don't think it's significant enough to think about. But my understanding was the feedback from the Mulan release was somewhat underwhelming.
One thing about this HBO thing is you're not going to have to pay any extra.
Did they say that?
Which I think... Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
It's gonna be the same cost as your subscription. So it's not gonna be that extra upcharge, which I think was people's main issue with the Mulan stuff. So this is just, hey, if you have HBO Max, you get every new movie.
This is
like it's like when we had MoviePass. Like just like the
I think I'd be okay with the extra charge. Like, I didn't watch Mulan specifically, just because at the time it was like, what, September? Like, I just wasn't that interested mm-hmm. in. Like, I love Mulan, the animated version. I just wasn't geared up for ready to watch this specific movie. Now, had they done that with Tenet, I probably would have watched Tenet right out of the gate. But I know Christopher Nolan would rather die than have me watch Tenet and give him $35.
Yeah, Adam and I saw it in theaters and
lived to tell the story.
Well, it was my roommate's actually one of his friends like rented out a theater, and so it was like a few of us, like 10 of us in a theater, and you know, wasn't very crowded. I felt pretty okay with it. And yeah, that thing is though, Tenet wasn't that great either. And that's the thing. And I don't know if that's just this year being a downer for movies. Because even at the beginning of the year, Adam, we're talking about how this year is going to be kind of weird. And so far this year, the movie quality, I think, hasn't been... compared to last year, it hasn't been necessarily great, I would say. And yeah, Tenet wasn't necessarily the best experience. And I think HBO even... or Warner Brothers even said, or HBO, Warner Brothers, right? They said that the decision to do this was because of Tenet's performance at the box office. So,
and I mean, it makes it, and I'm sure a lot of people that went, it was like probably a weird experience. They went, a lot of people were underwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, there's no sense in that. Obviously, as the year goes on, as the vaccine becomes more available, all that kind of stuff, that stuff could change a little bit. And this deal is just for the 2021 release. It's not like it's in perpetuity. But at the same time, like, would I... If I had the choice, Space Jam: A New Legacy, would I see that in theaters or would I watch it at home?
There's,
I would probably be more likely to watch it at home.
It's like Microsoft Game Pass, and it seems like this is what HBO maybe is doing: is, hey, we are selling people on HBO Max. You can get all these new releases, no charge, HBO Max. That's what Microsoft does with Game Pass. We have these games for free. Buy Game Pass, and I think, and also like on that. That version too. Like, there are games that I buy digitally and games I buy physical. Mm-hmm. Physical games are the more big tentpole AAA games. The digital games are maybe more small. They're smaller games, so they aren't going to take up a lot of space. That could be the same way with movies. Whereas, Space Jam 2 comes out, I might just go watch it at home. But let's say, Matrix 4. Maybe I go to the theater to see that, because I know that's going to be more of a spectacle. It's going to be, you want the big sound. There are movies made for big sound systems, for humongous screens, and people are still going to go see movies for that.
And I think that there is a big opportunity here for, I mean, just this separation that you're making. Like, I understand that theaters are going to want parents to drag 4 kids to a theater and buy 5 tickets and, popcorn for 5 kids. Like, I get it. The money is there. But at the same time, I think that same parent would rebuy Trolls World Tour 5 times, like, for those kids who would whine about it, because in their heads they're like, hey, it's accessible, I want to watch it again. So, like, I get that the distribution of revenue is going to be fucked up when they go this route, but like, it needs to be a breaking point for them to realize, like, hey, maybe I don't need 15 screens. Maybe I can take up some of this space and have, 10 screens, make them bigger and space out the seats and change the experience that all of my, audience is having in a theater. So hopefully that we see who comes out of this as an innovator. I mean, much like the restaurant and all these other industries that are suffering, and the discussion is like, oh, I hope they're there when they come out of it. Like, they will be there. It'll just be owned by a person who's just been sitting on a bunch of fucking money this whole time. Like, it might not be the independent Alamo Draft House, which would be tragic, but somebody will open a theater in that same spot.
And I think kind of the Alamo Draft House experience, AMC was already kind of doing exactly what they were wanting to do with that. They took all those ideas and stuff. I think, it's going to be that for big stuff. And then there will be very, very small theaters that...
Mm-hmm. You have your boutique that, indie, like Angelica.
Right, which is going to be... I mean, even Angelica, like, that's kind of like a within a system, which may struggle. It may have to be like truly very independent stuff. I know the independent theaters here just shut back down until Christmas because there's just not enough to have them make money right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how this gets tweaked. Because, first of all, Christopher Nolan called HBO Max the worst streaming service, which is just not true. It's so good.
No, they got The Sopranos.
The latency is so bad. Like, what are you talking about?
And The Wire.
It'll be interesting to see how, like, if they get it for a year and they're like, all right, all these people are going to come for Dune or whatever it is. And then what happens the next year?
You got to think that's when you want to tee up, like, your Game of Thrones prequel. Like, HBO is going to save something that would have come out in 2021, mostly probably because of production delays, but you're going to have like huge series dropping right after that cliff, like to try to keep as many of those subscriptions as possible.
Yeah. And if more sign on to do something similar, it's going to be a whole, the Wild West. All this did is accelerate what was happening. Just in such a sense that like people are not going to have options, and there's not going to be time to kind of experiment and do wild ass things. They'll do wild ass things, but just kind of, it won't be as spread out as it may have been otherwise.
Yeah, I love it, but I'm, you know, cautiously optimistic about it, because I think the one thing I just don't like about streaming services is the curation of like, hey, they're going to spend this much money to be on the front page of Netflix, or this is what Netflix wants you to watch.
Right.
Or also just the fact that like not everything you want to watch is going to be streaming, you know, like, so I don't know. And I guess if you want to seek it out, you can seek it out. But, you know, there are so many times where it's like, yeah, I want to watch this movie, and it is nowhere to be found, except for Amazon Prime. I guess Amazon Prime kind of fixes that issue with renting. I think Amazon Prime is great for that.
YouTube does well with that, too. I don't think that they ever highlight that well, but YouTube has a really smooth and easy process. Like, if you just search a movie, it'll pop up in the stream of, like, rent for $3.99 or purchase.
Okay.
And it's on there.
All right.
They do. And then if you have YouTube TV, it will then kick over to your library over there, but nobody advertises that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Cause I always worry about that. Like for, you know, like someone like me is growing up where I was just finding so many different movies, and I'm, you know, looking stuff up and buying DVDs and buying just like 10 DVDs a week, just watching whatever, you know. I think that's somewhat important for people who like movies, and, you know, it's not important, but you know what I mean? It's for someone, you know, who likes movies, it's important to get a variety, not just something that Netflix deems
one of,
incredible.
One of my media professors was like the first person who's like, hey, go on Twitter. And so like, I still follow him. I don't know why, but he's decent follow on Twitter. But one of his ongoing rants is always to like, make sure you own your physical media, or own your copies of your media. Like, you know, not as like a, hey, the sky is falling approach, but like for that very reason, like you may purchase a movie on YouTube or Amazon Prime, and that deal is broken between that movie and Amazon Prime. Like that movie's not going to stay on there just for you. It goes away. And then, you know, whenever you have series transfer from one streaming service to the next, it's like, maybe if you really, really, really like these things, go spend the $8 every now and again.
Yeah, 100%. And then this is a whole nother topic, but, you know, like audio commentaries and special features and behind the scenes, like that's what Blu-rays are great for. And I hope there's always room for that. I think there will be. But
you can't find it on YouTube. I'm not sure where it is online, but if you can ever have the opportunity to listen to the it's not director because he had direct it, but the Ben Affleck commentary over Armageddon.
Okay.
11 out of 10 hilarity. At one point he goes to Michael Bay or whoever was directing, and he's like, what the fuck are we doing with the gun in space? Like, how's this going to work? And I guess Michael Bay, whomever it was like, shut the fuck up and say your lines. They're like, if you shoot the bullet, incredible. How's that going to work with no gravity?
Look, man. I'm
tired of this shit. Awesome. Now go fuck Liv Tyler.
Space dementia.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
Trey, the other news that you wanted to talk about, big deal. Oscar Isaac is Solid Snake in the Metal Gear Solid movie.
Uh-huh.
All I can see is kind of this picture side by side. It looks about right.
They always put Big Boss, though, instead of actual Solid Snake.
Oh.
That's the issue, though. There's five different snakes, KJ and Adam. Uh-huh. There's
Shadow
so many.
Snake, Ghost Snake.
There's... You're not even that far off. It's like Solidus Snake. Solidus Snake, yes.
Is there
you
a
got
solid,
solid snake,
or...
liquid snake, solidus snake, you got boss, you got big boss, you got venom
boss
snake.
Boss and big boss?
Well, yeah, you got the boss, and you got big boss, oh, and you got boss venom baby. Snake. Boss baby too.
Oh, that's something I have been watching. I know it's a bit. I know it's a bit, but... There's a Boss Baby TV show or series.
Oh, that's on Netflix.
That stays on downstairs when my wife is watching the kid downstairs. She loves it. I've watched like 3 episodes, but I only think of why is his name Austin anytime I think of Boss Baby.
It's a Boss Baby. He's the boss.
Baby.
What was I even...
Alec Baldwin needs something to do now that the orange buffoon...
He can't purse his lips anymore. He has to do more Boss Baby. Yeah, so Oscar Isaac is... These are so weird because they always do this. But it seems like they've been consistent recently. They always say like they always tap someone to direct or star in one of these movies and it never happens. And the Metal Gear Solid movie, I mean, there was the guy who did Kong Skull Island was always talking about wanting to direct this, but that was just him talking. I don't know if anyone seriously considered him for it. And so, like, there's really no director, no script. I have no clue who's even directing it. But they said Oscar Isaac is going to star as Solid Snake, which is... I mean, you know, it's fine.
Says great here,
all good.
Jordan Vogt Roberts.
Okay, so it is the same guy. He's actually doing it.
That's what it says.
Okay, well, that's the director. He is very passionate about doing a Metal Gear Solid movie.
Oh, well,
and he's had the blessings of Kojima, and I think he has, and so I don't know. I mean, I don't see. That thing with video game movies is that you're kind of taking away what makes the video game great is the gameplay. And so like The Last of Us is already a movie. Like it's a great game and the story's really good for what it's doing because you're interacting with it. But when you take away the interaction, it's just a zombie post-apocalyptic TV show.
Metal Gear
would work. Yes, it's great. Yes, just like Walking Dead. It's great. when Metal Gear is so weird because it's almost anime. Like there's so much weirdness in it. It has this sort of facade of like a very serious secret agent, but like there is some kooky shit in that game, in that series. And I wonder if the Hollywood execs would get a little too scared putting that in their movie. Like a guy shitting himself or a guy's arm being possessed or
those sound like the
machines.
Two things they'd keep.
You would hope they would keep that. Nanomachines. Just.
Are they going to keep the exclamation point?
That would be cool. I think one of these video game movies needs to really hone in on the video gamey parts of it, like that, like the question mark.
Did Pokemon do that? Not like the Pokemon Detective. It kept some of it.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, I think it did. It was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun.
It was way more palatable than I expected going into it.
Yes, definitely. Yes, it was pretty cool to watch.
Do you know how old the director is, Jordan Vogt Roberts?
He is like in his 40s.
He's 36.
36, okay.
And Kong Skull Island, about $570 million in box office.
Jeez.
He won the Dallas International Film Festival, Trey.
Okay, for Kong Skull Island?
Hometown, no, for his movie that got him Kong Skull Island.
Okay. You know what's interesting is, like, all these, you know, like, indie directors are getting tapped to, like, do these massive projects.
Yeah, they jump straight from small stuff to,
you know where I think it started? Peter Jackson. Because Peter Jackson, all he really did before Lord of the Rings was, like, a bunch of splatter films, which are pretty good. And then he did Heavenly Creatures, which is very indie. It's a very indie movie. It's, you know, it's very small drama. And then he does Lord of the Rings. And I mean, I've watched all those appendices, but they never gave you a reason why he was able to do it. It was just like, yeah, we did it. Frighteners? Oh, yeah, he did the Frighteners, yeah. But it's weird, like, hey, here's a guy who's done this horror, mostly just splatter movie. Not even horror, they're splatter movies. And then, hey, he's going to direct the three biggest
movies of history.
I know, ever.
Sometimes I think it's the studios want to get them before the directors really have like a say in things. They want to be able to mold them to, hey, this is part of a greater series. We need this to be this way and this to be this way.
The weird thing too is because like we're watching those appendices or the document behind the scenes, like they had a script. And they had it, and they presented it to Harvey Weinstein. And he's like, we want to make this one movie. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. And they went over to New Line. So, like, they had
the worst decision he ever made.
Yeah, the worst he ever made. Worst ever made. And they went to New Line, and then they gave him three movies. So, like, they had the rights somehow to it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I want to research into that, because and that might have started the whole indie director directs huge series thing. Does it work there?
Especially, I guess the big differentiation would be like any director directs huge movie, but like not a movie that then becomes huge. You know what I mean? Not like a Richard Linklater type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Adam. Well, what else have you been, how have you watched?
Let's see. Just since the last time we spoke, I watched Hillbilly Elegy.
Okay, that's
because you know it's important to know how the other half lives. This guy, he's
Appalachian,
he's a hillbilly, but he's also a Yale man.
So Ron Howard's brother is not in this.
He's not in it. It's a movie about hillbillies, and you don't use Clint Howard in the movie. Very suspicious. I hope everything's okay in the Howard family. It's not that great. Mm-hmm. there's some
reviews
stuff,
weren't good.
There's some stuff that's okay. Glenn Close is wild in the movie. Mm-hmm. Amy Adams is pretty good. She's struggling with addiction. Her son goes off to be a Yale man, and he's trying to have these job interviews and gets called back because his mom's having a meltdown. And then it kind of goes to back through its history. Not my favorite. Watch Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. Old school McConaughey.
Okay.
Emma Stone's first movie. 2009. Being gay was very wrong. It was the funniest thing that could happen is if someone, like, you cannot be seen as gay. That's not a great movie. I watched Mank. I watched David Fincher's Mank. I saw it described online as Avengers for old Hollywood lovers.
Okay.
Which is fair. It's okay. At one point, Gary Oldman, who is clearly like 65, is like, I'm 43. And so he's an old man. Keep track of how many times they say Mank in the movie.
Yeah.
It's so much. They are looking for any excuse to say Mank.
Does it feel like a Fincher movie?
I wouldn't say it does. Mm-hmm. It partially because it's in black and white, so everything can't be blue or orange.
Right.
But it really doesn't feel like a Fincher movie, even in the way characters talk, and part of that's because it's a period movie. Mm-hmm. They do have... It does sound like an old movie where it has like the constant hiss and everything. And then they also added some very obviously like faked cigar burns in the top
marks or whatever.
Right. So they were doing the trying to be like, oh, it's a old movie sort of thing. The guy who played Orson Welles sounds like Orson Welles. Sorry, KJ, what's up?
No. I was saying like they're just trying to be old movie. Like, get it? Right. Look at all these. Yeah. You know,
this is something that only. That only real movie lovers will like. I mean, it's fine. All it made me want to do is watch Citizen Kane. Because it's all about, it like builds to, well, he's writing this great thing. And they're all talking about how great Citizen Kane is and the whole time. But then at the end, you don't get to watch Citizen Kane.
They're just
talking about how great this like movie he wrote is. Be like, man, I want to watch that movie. Like that's the whole thing. So I watched Citizen Kane as well. Still great.
Well, I love that my sister who's in college, she was in a film class, and I'm like, hey, do you need any help? She's like, hey, I'm just struggling. Have you ever seen Citizen Kane? I'm like, yeah. We had to watch that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Did she?
Yeah. I'd never heard of Mank. I feel like I've heard of Mink, the Michael Irvin story and his life and times in the White House. Two totally different black and white films, though, I guess.
We should make a Mink trailer.
The trailer could work.
It's also a cheesy Christmas movie time.
Mm.
This is my first year without the Hallmark Channel in a while, so I haven't been able just to pop into Hallmark movies. Netflix had one with Vanessa Hudgens called The Night Before Christmas, and boy, The Night is with a K, you guys.
Oh, so let me guess. She is a hard drinking business lady, and she has to go back to her hometown for Christmas, and she finds an aw shucks guy who teaches her the reason for the season.
But he's carrying a lance.
Ooh. Ooh.
This is a twist on the Hallmark movie, because this is technically a Netflix movie, so it doesn't exactly follow the Hallmark model. It is about a knight who gets transported to the future, and Vanessa Hudgens is a hardworking teacher.
So it's like Your Highness.
It's not like Your Highness.
It's like Encino Man.
Yeah.
Plus Black Knight.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Plus Hallmark movie.
Yes. It's maybe the worst movie I've ever seen. It's so bad. It was like, all right, we got the title and the movie writes itself. And then they were like,
Knight in shining armor. What if he's really a knight in shining armor?
You see, this is the point that they make.
He wouldn't have the same values back then as he would today, probably.
Any point in the movie, does he stand up for her like honor or like shut another guy down for treating her the wrong way?
He does. He most certainly does. He also has a fight with an Alexa.
Okay. does anyone ever say
talk to technology?
Does anyone ever say chivalry is dead?
He stays up and he watches TV, and the next morning he says yeet and AF.
Okay, I need to watch this.
They gave the Fifth Element treatment. He just consumed all the culture via like binge watch.
He was so amazed by the picture box. He was also somehow a great baker, even though like he didn't use an oven. Like there's no ovens. How is this a thing? And then I watched Home Alone.
Okay.
One or two?
I watched the original Home Alone, which my main takeaway was, in my memory, the movie was like 80% him smashing the wet bandits. That is not the case. I don't know what it was, but I was like, oh no, the wet bandits get there pretty quick, and he like stops them like four or five times. He does do it three times, but only once does he do the smashing.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you guys who you would rather be, Marv or Harry. For Marv, let's see, we have Marv gets shot with a BB gun in the crotch. Mm-hmm. He then falls down some stairs. Marv actually gets shot in the head. Marv gets shot in the head with the BB gun, falls down icy stairs, takes an iron down a laundry chute to the face, steps on tar steps to get his shoes taken off.
God, then gets he gets a nail.
Gets a nail in the foot.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Then after he's shoeless, steps on bulbs and ornaments, which, you know, more foot injuries. Falls on micro machines, takes a paint buck to the face.
When do you just leave? When do you just cut bait and leave? It's not worth it.
Well, at one point, like, they're there to rob the house.
Right.
Macaulay Culkin goes upstairs to go set more pranks. You have full reign to the bottom to the bottom of the house. Take whatever you want from there and get out.
The kid's seen our face.
Gotta kill him.
That's true. He knows you have the gold tooth. And then a fall from the treehouse rope as they were trying to zip line across. And then Harry, you have BB gun to the crotch. Also fall down some stairs, but he falls so high and so flat on his back. It's it's much worse. Hand branding. He heats up the doorknob. And goes grabs the hot doorknob. Gets the M on his hand. The flamethrower to the head. The single funniest frame in movie history. which, you know, if it was Marv, just imagine his whole face would be burned off. Tar and feathered. That's another thing that happened to Harry, which is, you know, not physically painful, but emotionally really tears you down.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you feel like a fool. He also had a micro machine fall. He also took a paint bucket to the face. So there you go. You get your gold tooth knocked out.
I'd probably go Harry, with Harry, without doubt. The foot. Yeah, the nail in the foot. You gotta get some hep shots for that.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
The nail on the foot. If the flamethrower was just a little bit lower and it did more than just burn his hat, then you go, you burn your hat, you stick your head in the snow in order to put it out.
It does lead to the best handstand I've ever seen in my life in Home Alone 2. Where he goes to stick his head into the toilet and he's got the kerosene in there. That's on some unnecessary.
I still have not seen Home Alone 2.
You haven't seen Home Alone 2? Starring
what'd you just say, Trey?
Orange buffoon.
I've not seen Home Alone 2 starring the orange man.
You need to watch it.
Okay.
I guess
I'll watch it by next week.
Can I ask that standard cheesy question? If y'all haven't covered Christmas movies already, is there one? I mean, it sounds like Hallmark movies are a part of your yearly tradition, Adam, but is there one from your youth that, whether or not you watch it now, but you kind of just associate, okay, it's Christmas time, this is typically when I watch this or these movies.
For sure. And that is Jim Carrey's How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
That was one growing up as a kid, and I fell off it for a while until last year. I rewatched it and with new eyes, and it's the best Christmas movie ever.
I watched it every year. I mean, there's a Christmas Story, obviously. Mm-hmm. We watched Christmas Story House.
Santa Claus was always
Christmas Story House. I could walk Santa Claus right now. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Some of it shot in Cleveland.
Nice.
I will never. I'm sorry. Christmas Story is the
Red Ryder BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never mind. I'm not a big fan of that one.
Wow.
Bad time. Okay.
Yeah, that was always on way too much at the house. Okay, I won't come to your city.
There's a lot of leg lamp pride here.
Santa Claus was always one that I really liked. And I think I liked the progression of Tim Allen turning into a big old Santa Claus.
With not Oscar Isaac in it?
Yes, non-Oscar Isaac's in it.
There's three guys who all look alike. That's one of them. Oscar Isaac, mm-hmm. and then the guy from Let's Be Cops. Like, those three guys are all identical.
Yeah, David.
What's his
name? David, like, very standard name. One's Oscar Isaac, one's like Chris Johnson or David Smith, something standard, and then the other one, I don't remember his name. For me, I grew up watching the animated Grinch, so that's...
Yeah.
I mean, it's only like 15, 20 minutes long.
Right.
I own like the album recording of it. And so I listened to that. Christmas Story was on just like everybody else, the 24 hours on TBS. It was great background noise, you know, see it in parts. I couldn't tell you start to finish what the plot sequence is or what the story sequence is, but I see it annually.
Uh-huh.
My wife's family.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say my wife's family has always been diehard Jim Carrey Grinch fans. So I never really watched it, cause I was like, whatever, remake. Pfft. Probably how a lot of people look at like the current animated one, the 3D one.
Right.
From a couple years ago, but over time and hearing them quote it like 365 days a year, like it's grown on me. It's very quotable. It's very enjoyable. Jim Carrey did very well with that. Unlike Elf,
it's way better than it should be. It's
100%.
Yeah. Because the animated Grinch is fantastic, and it's like, all right, well, let's make it kind of silly. But it knows what it is in all the best ways in certain parts.
And it's so weird. Like, that would not be made today. Like, that is too weird to be made today. It's the Super Mario. It's like if they actually did Super Mario Brothers the movie right. Because, like, they're like, okay, we're going to take something that does not need to be in real life, and we're just going to turn it into like a nightmare. and they did. And it's great.
Don't threaten Tim Burton like, with a good time.
So KJ, is Grinch your pick, or is there,
I would say the animated Grinch is definitely my pick. I enjoy the new one now. But the OG animated is probably the one I've got to see.
Okay. I would say, probably the Jim Carrey Grinch, but I always liked the Santa Claus, but I haven't watched that in a long time, and maybe it doesn't hold up as much.
Tim Allen doesn't hold up.
Yeah, that's the thing too, right? Yeah, I don't know anymore with Tim Allen. Let's see here. So we're, my other answer, Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings trilogy. That's always a Christmas time movie for KJ's rolling his eyes.
How do you feel about Die Hard, Dre?
All right, I'm done.
Hot dog.
I'm done with
sandwich or nah?
Whoa, we have these debates online.
Oh, the Die Hard thing. I will kill a man this year if I hear that one.
You're going to give it a week, and it will organically come up.
And you know what?
What happened in Nakasan Plaza or whatever the fuck? Like, somebody's gonna post that and think they're hilarious.
It's gonna be a promo for one of the Fox Sports SB Nation whatever's airing overnight, you know, for that. So I know for a fact it's gonna be one of those. Hey guys, it's the James and Ringer show. I don't know what their names are. We're gonna say Die Hard, best Christmas movie, right?
Nothing makes me feel more capable at standing in front of a microphone and talking in a sensible manner than listening to those promos.
Yeah, it's horrible. They're terrible. The worst. And I have to listen to, sometimes when there's no top 10, I have to listen to 30 minutes of Clay Travis.
Exciting. So,
welcome back to Outkick, COVID bros.
Hey, we just say it like it is, man. We just say it like it is. Non-biased, no spin zone. Just common sense.
NFL ratings are down.
So NBA woke. Too woke. Too woke. Well, KJ, you know what isn't going.
Here we go.
You know what rating? You know what? I'm really trying to transition, but it's not working. That's okay. So we got the films of your life here, KJ. It's your life, and these are the films And I gave you a list, and you did the list. You have it in front of you. And so let's just some of the movies of your life, KJ. Not a segment that we stole anywhere. It is a purely original segment that we do here. Just doing movies. So first, on your list, KJ, movie that you hate.
This might have been the most difficult one to figure out for movies for me. And I think a little bit of it's because of this year and feeling so disconnected from like my mental log of movies. Like sure. I haven't even been watching like old stuff this year. So I had to go back to the most recent movie that I actually sat through, consumed, and said, that's absolute shit. And I know a lot of people are going to be upset, but, you know, whatever. A lot of people have bad opinions, like Arrested Development being a good show. Kidding.
Wow.
Princess Bride's a bad movie.
Wow!
Okay. Starting off with a heater.
I watched this an episode of Partial Recall with Mino like a year and a half ago. And okay. I've heard it referenced for ages. I probably watched it briefly as a kid. I certainly watched Robin Hood Men in Tights and was familiar with Cary Elwes. And wait, was he in that or is he in the other Robin Hood?
Yep.
He was in Men in Tights, right?
Yep.
Okay. So like I'd seen him in the, you know, spoofed character and in that same vein. And I liked that. I liked that whole Naked Gun approach to Robin Hood. It was good. But for some reason, and maybe it's because I've seen Homeland too recent, like I couldn't get through enjoying Princess Bride and like walking out and being like, huh, that's hilarious. Like, and I grew up loving like Monty Python and that like vein of humor, but this just wasn't my cup of tea. And so that's the most recent movie that I've watched and been like, wasn't good.
I could totally see how that would just be like, after years of hearing about it, you get to it and it just not being the same.
Yeah.
But this is it?
Yeah. Where it gets built up in a certain way. I mean, I disagree strongly with the take, but I do know that feeling where it's like you haven't seen something, everyone tells you it's great, and then you're like, you know what? Maybe I wasn't wrong the whole time for not getting on this.
That was the one movie that I think I've seen the first 30 minutes of more than any other movie, because they would always, if there was nothing to do in class, they would always put that on for 30 minutes and then, you know, it's then no, we're done. And so I did finally watch that a few years ago, and I remember maybe not being like, maybe not as harsh as KJ, but not necessarily, you know, thinking it was the best thing ever.
I agree. It's the U2 of movies.
Fine. The U2 of movies. All right, KJ, movie you think is overrated?
See, I feel like the bad guy starting off with these two. Then I've got to just shit on movies, so I'm just setting the table for all the movies I actually enjoy to be shit on for the remainder of this. Fight Club is the one that kept coming to mind. I enjoy Fight Club. I think it's a decent movie, but I think being the age, I'm 34, and so, you know, when Fight Club was popular, it was kind of right around the realm of like Facebook and social media become popular where like everyone was highlighting their favorite movie or like trying to tie their personality into, you know, I'm a real big Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels guy or whatever. Real Guy Ritchie film. Did you ever see Layer Cake, dude?
Hell yeah.
Like, it's the best. but then you would have this huge contingent of guys who were just like, Fight Club, bro. Like, it's just my shit. That's just who I am. And so like, that sentiment about that movie is just so unnecessary. It's not that deep. Like, it's not so philosophical. Like, fucking come on. Like, it's a good movie, but, you know, people like have shit tattooed on them from that movie.
Yeah, people like it for the wrong reasons, too. That's one of those, like, hey, we like as dudes fighting, just, you know, about fighting. It's like, well, it's a kind of, it's not really about that. It's about
criticism of masculinity, man.
Yeah, bro. Sort of. It's about the opposite of what the people who like it think it's about.
The in my like intro to film classes in college, people go around and say their favorite movie, and Fight Club came up way more than it should have. And it was just like, oh, okay, I know exactly what kind of person you are. And it's not,
the professor's like, okay, you are not going to watch the Japanese films I assigned you.
Right, exactly.
All right, KJ, movie that you think is underappreciated.
Underappreciated. So this would have been the one that had I done the extra step of saying, hey, let's check this movie out so I can talk through, because I haven't seen it in a while and I plan to watch it this year because I think technically snow falls during it, so I'm calling it a Christmas movie. But that would be the 1992 Barry Levinson film, Robin Williams, Toys.
Okay.
I've not seen Toys.
Toys is a movie that's based in like kind of a fantastical world, but it's based like in a Willy Wonka-esque toy factory. And inevitably, somebody wants to come in and build military toys, but this pure of heart Robin Williams character who's like bequeathed this whole entire world that he's grown up in, you know, obviously can't stand for that. And then in the end, you have the inevitable battle between like these classic Montessori, like wind up toys that are just all analog and non electronic. And then you have the like loud buzzing gun, like loaded robotic toys. And I thought it was done in a very low level to where me as a kid watching it at like fucking 6, 7, 8, 9 could just watch it and see toys battle. But then as I saw it as a teenager, and I probably saw it most recently like 5, 6 years ago as an adult, like I won't ever say Joan Cusack is like a good actress, or but she did a good enough part in her role as like this female animatronic love interest of Robin Williams, like to carry the plot, say, okay, you know what? There's something to it. Actually, she wasn't his. There was a different chick that was. But there was enough to the movie that kind of kept me interested throughout. And I didn't think that it was pure nostalgia when I went back and watched it. So I'll say underappreciated, probably just unknown is more accurate.
Would you say Small Soldiers kind of aped that a little bit? Yeah.
I mean, as far as just like the very basic toys.
The idea.
You know, nature versus technology. Like, I mean, Avatar is the same way. It's just not in toys.
Yeah,
so.
I guess. Yeah. All right.
I will say I have not seen this movie. I did listen to on my one of the bad movie podcasts that I listened to. Yes. They covered this, and it sounded absolutely wild.
Yeah, it's. I don't know that I would go back and say like this is a like this deserved Oscars. Like this is what Robin Williams should have been known for, but I think the experience was probably unique enough to me in my youth. Like I'm looking like Rotten Tomatoes giving it 30%, Letterboxd, I don't know what their rating system is. A 5 on IMDb is hit or miss. I was going back and looking at some of the other movies out there and I'm like, there's especially comedies. It's so fucking all over the place with like what, like Bill and Ted has like over 80% for the original Bill and Ted, but like Cheech and Chong or Friday are both like sub 50 or not Friday Life or Bub like so 50%. I'm like, it's the same movie. Right. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But anyways, movie that I love.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. Movie that you love.
No, hot takes here. The Jerk. I wanted to make sure I did include some comedy, on this, but, and I got a couple of them, but The Jerk is probably one of the biggest movies of like Coming to America's up there, but The Jerk, like the two movies I watched as a kid with my parents, but then I will certainly continue to watch, you know, in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, fun.
I like that movie a lot.
It's just like bits after bits after bits. Like it, like there's really not a time where it sags even for, and for like how many just jokes there are in the movie. That's mm-hmm. crazy.
The thinking of it, like the slowest quote unquote part of the movie is like when he's rich and then about to lose his money. And those are like some of the funniest parts.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, I won't miss the money, but I'll miss all the stuff. Like, I don't know. But I love the movie. I'll watch it probably.
I like the ukulele scene in that. Mm-hmm. That's a nice little scene in there. Yeah. Movie you can watch over and over.
This was a quick. Pulp Fiction jumped up first, but Friday is probably the one that I said, okay, yeah. What could I quote 90%+ of? And I'd probably say Friday. If I just started it and I could get all the random little lines in between the scenes and shit that's not even quotable, like it was something that I had on VHS, had on DVD, had on Blu-ray, probably still own a copy or two of.
I remember seeing that a long time ago and liking it, but I have not watched it since. And that's something I probably should go back and watch because I remember enjoying it.
Watch it. Get Donovan on to review it.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he would. Actually, he probably would be one of the people to come on. He would. More so than Saroy, probably. Way more, I think. All right. You have anything to say on that, Adam?
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
No, I'm good. We can keep moving.
All right, movie that made you fall in love with movies.
This, I was trying to avoid the minefield of standard intro to film movies. Like, coming in here and seeing Citizen Kane really opened my eyes to what directors of photography do for your experience. It was a mix between two movies I actually did see in two film classes. Battle Royale is probably one. Okay. 2000 Battle Royale. It was something that on its surface is like would make you hate that the Hunger Games and like that whole vein of movie exists on the premise of Battle Royale. And you're like, just watch Battle Royale. You'll love this more. You don't have busty, you know, heartthrob leading it. But like the nuance in that movie, the experience in that movie and some of the subplots in that, I obviously had to have them spoon fed to me. But once I saw a movie and realized there were that many layers to something that you could otherwise watch and be like, oh, this is just murder porn. Was just that changed things for me, in a big way. And then The Graduate was the other one. And again, an intro to film movie that everybody sees, but that was another one where you begin to get some explanation. This is why they're shooting this. Like even on the box cover, like under her leg or, you know, playing this specific song. And that's what this song is about. And all of those other things that make great movies great. You don't know how to look for them until you start seeing movies like this and have those things highlighted.
Yeah. Graduate's my pick for this category as well. So good. It like there's nothing more fun than like watching a movie, kind of enjoying it at surface level and then digging in deeper and then being like, "Oh wow, it's even better than the good movie that I thought it was already." Like that's always great.
And I know, Adam, you told me about the audio commentary on the DVD, which is supposed to be really good, right?
Yeah, it's a specific commentary by a critic, not by the director or anything like that. That just was like so good.
Be interested to hear that. I think it's I try to think of some of these movies and like, you know, I reflexively did it with The Jerk, like how much you can quote movies that are ingrained into your psyche. But with The Graduate, it's weird when I find myself feeling like the final scene, which again, that's not that fucking unique, but those weird moments in your life, you're like, all right, I built up to this and this is it. And you're just,
yeah,
just fucking riding along and the slow smile fade. And I'm like, all right, well, this ruins it.
Yeah.
Once I like switch to that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
All right, KJ, movie by your favorite director.
I had to do some real soul searching to think of who my favorite director was. I probably could have come up with one a few years ago. I mean, all of your standard Tarantino, Guy Ritchie, like dude directors. I enjoy all of their movies. I'll watch all of them. Spike Lee probably is the one that stood tall for me in terms of saying like, I will watch bad movies of his and try to enjoy it because I like the reasons why he's made some of his movies, and Do the Right Thing is easily one of the most approachable movies of his. And it's just weird to like go through years like this and have like June go happen and then be like, all right, let me put on Do the Right Thing and be like, this has happened before. We will make through this situation and it'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, rewatching that this year, it definitely still holds true. And the movie was made back in 89,
mm-hmm.
90. And really, yeah, still a really great movie.
It's just like disgusting to think of somebody having that talent at that point in their career. And just like,
he was so young too. He was like
insane. Yeah.
Movie that surprised
me.
I do like the move of casting
you being the lead and then casting the hot lady to have sex with you multiple times in the movie.
It's a power move. And not even having like anybody else have anything close to that experience in the movie.
Yeah, just you. No, hey, I would do that. Might as well. Okay, movie that surprised you. Next.
I don't know how or why or what I was doing that led me to watch this movie, but I think that it was an on-demand purchase, and it was... Oh, actually, I do know. Let me back up. I was a big fan of The United States of Tara. TV shows on Showtime. Only 3 seasons, but it featured Toni Nicolette, I believe is her full name. She was in... not Sedentary, or Hereditary.
Oh, yes.
The lead from Hereditary. Whatever her last name is, I might have got that wrong.
Toni Collette. She's
not
great.
Nicolette.
Yeah.
Toni Collette. But also featured in United States Heroes, Brie Larson.
Okay.
And I thought her character was really advanced and well developed. Then there's like a plot where she's like a debt collector in United States Heroes. It was just stupid. It was a good show. But I saw this movie come up and I watched it and did not know what to expect, didn't know what it was about, hadn't heard any Oscar buzz, which it got some and she won 4. But I jumped into Room completely blind.
Okay.
And it fucking wrecked me.
Yeah. That would be what, not knowing anything about that would be, that movie's great.
I've not seen that one. It's
very different than The Room.
Yeah, you think it's The Room?
I don't know what it was. I think it was just like on demand and rented. It was one of those Fridays where like, hey, let's find a movie, pick a movie. Mm-hmm. That was there. Brie Larson's in it. Let's do it. And that left turn, and from the rest of the movie on, you're just like, my throat hurts. I'm just crying the whole time. This is terrible. So that was something different. I haven't rewatched it, which is crazy. Other than that, I would probably say The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Cause that movie drug. But the entire time you're just like on pins and needles of like, all right, is it going to happen? Like, what's happening? Where are we going with this? And then it happens and they continue the movie and then like drive the point home. And I'm like, fuck, that's kind of different.
Another one that's on my list. Those two are on my list. Definitely of movies to watch.
Place Beyond the Pines was also in
that was
list.
That was
those
that
three was good, all yeah. ones I wanted to list because they killed the lead.
They did.
In Act One.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. All right, a movie that is your guilty pleasure.
Matilda.
Okay.
Is actually a movie that I would probably like. I'd reflexively say, "Is what's your favorite movie?" I'd probably say Matilda. They would think I was joking. And I don't mean it in an obsessive way, but like in the same way that people like Harry Potter or for the reasons they like Harry Potter, like Matilda was that for me.
Okay.
You know, you've got this fantastical weirdo kid that's, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, that's unwanted. I don't mean that like in a projecting way, but you try to cling to those things when you're a kid and you like try to feel like, you know, you're an oddball and you see this movie, you know, and she's a foster kid and obviously it's based on Broadway and all that stuff. But it just flowed really well. It flowed quickly. It didn't try to do too much. It stuck the landing. And then you've got Danny DeVito just fucking killing his role the whole entire time. So Matilda, I may own more than one copy of Matilda.
Okay. And I have not seen that in years.
Yeah.
Only because I bought it at like movie trading company and then bought it at movie trading company. Because
I forgot that happens, I bought it at movie trading company. Trust me. It happens.
Matilda's fun as hell.
Yeah.
It's that's one I haven't watched in a while as well, but have only good thoughts about.
Yeah, definitely the cake eating, it's great. Movie that you should have seen by now.
I had to take the generic Scorsese off of like my, you know, movies by your favorite director off, strictly because once I got to this question, I'd be embarrassed. I've not seen Godfather or Goodfellas, any of them.
Okay.
And I moderately enjoy mob, you know, mob movies, shows, whatever. Like, I enjoy Sopranos. I watched the 9-hour movie they put out last Christmas with
De Niro.
You know what I'm talking about.
The Irishman.
De Niro, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Irishman. But I just have never felt compelled to say, like, hey, let me give 9 hours to this series or Casino. Like, I've just not seen any of those. And I know they're legendary. I know people love these movies, but I've not seen any of them.
I think Goodfellas is probably the most accessible of those. Yeah. That movie is a lot of fun, and it's more in line, I think, with like this. You said you watched The Sopranos. It's more in line with that, where it's a little more fun, oh my God. Don't you hate it when you just, you know, you should know the name of something that you just forget it? Not sex, Rolling Stones. There's a lot of Rolling Stones in that. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's a lot more fun, quick, fast paced, all that stuff. Yeah. It's very accessible. Godfather is a little more slow, and they're great movies, but I mean, I think if you're looking to watch one of them, I would say, Goodfellas.
Start with Goodfellas.
Goodfellas.
I'll save it for when I get my wisdom teeth out.
Oh, sorry.
I'll save my wisdom teeth for an opportunity to watch these movies.
Yeah.
Goodfellas. I mean, the easy comp for that one is Wolf of Wall Street. If you liked Wolf of Wall Street, that's kind of like the frenetic kind of attitude of Goodfellas.
Sold.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Final one is greatest movie theater experience.
Well, now I'm worried that this was also covered in Adam's podcast or podcast he listened to, because this one's not a good movie.
Okay.
But I think I've only gone to the movie theaters. Well, that's this complete lie. I've gone to movie theaters solo quite a bit as an adult, but like that's like once you get over like the going to movies as solo is weird. But pre-college age, I'd only gone to the movies solo 2 times. Once was for seeing like Friday Night Lights the second time because, you know, I was dumb high school jock.
You had to go see it with the football team the first time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We were required to. Yeah. That is true. I never watched the TV show, so I will vouch for the movie wasn't bad. Show I can't talk about. I don't know. But I was also an Eminem stan as a child.
Oh, hell yes.
So when 8 Mile came out.
Yeah.
As the product of divorced parents, I had every other weekend with my dad and Wednesday nights. And I vividly remember telling my dad the prior weekend, hey, I know it's a Wednesday next week, but can you just drop me off at the movie theater? I want to go see this movie. And he didn't want to go see 8 Mile. I was like, the only thing I want is to go see this movie. So I wasted like one of the, like the dad nights or whatever, to go see this movie. And like, he picks me up and like, it's like, all right, hey, can you like pull through Taco Bueno or whatever after? And I'm like, it's like, no, you missed dinner. Like, you don't get fucking second dinner cause you want to see a movie. I remember being very bitter about that, but it was worth it. Not a good movie, but you know, RIP Brittany Murphy, otherwise enjoyable experience.
I remember the beginning of it. I don't remember the rest of the movie.
You don't remember that Clarence's parents had a real good marriage?
They must have had a great marriage. It must have been really nice for Eminem.
Well, it's the rap battle at the end. I have not seen it in a while. In my head, it's great. It's so good. I watched it in middle school, and I was like, this rules.
What wrecked it for me was my dad, who grew up a huge Prince fan, sitting me down and making me watch Purple Rain, and then showing me that 8 Mile is identical to Purple Rain.
Oh, really?
Like almost in every way. Like, you've got this like rebellious kid, parents are fighting, terrible home situation, finds a girl, she cheats, he goes and has this like epic battle of the band scene at the end, and it's just like almost to a T, Purple Rain. Wow.
I've not seen Purple Rain either.
You need to, I won't say you need to run out and check it out, but if you don't hate Prince, like if you can tolerate Prince music, mm-hmm. it's not bad.
I'm fine with Prince. I'm not a huge music guy in general, but I dig Fair. Prince. You know, I wouldn't mind watching it.
A musical.
Yeah.
Trey, you know who's in 8 Mile?
Ethan Suplee. He seems like he'd be in it.
Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon. Oh, is yes, an 8 he Mile. Is. All right.
A very young Michael Shannon.
Yeah, he's like the stepdad, but he went to, or even the stepdad, he was dating Eminem's mom, right. but they went to school together.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So there you go.
Eminem and the guy dating his mom went to school together. So, like, she was banging a really young guy.
Well, KJ, thank you so much for coming on and doing the films of your life.
I appreciate it. This was fun.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I think, to go full circle here, starting our conversation off talking about how little or how few films I have watched this year, and then doing the work of thinking through all of these movies, at very least, has motivated me to say, okay, I need to go back and watch a couple of these.
Yeah.
And then maybe I need to go check out Mink and Mank.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Well, are you on Letterboxd, by the way?
I'm not on Letterboxd. Should I be on Letterboxd?
Yeah, it's a really good way to
sell me on Letterboxd. I'm open to
Adam,
it. What is it?
You probably could explain it better than me.
I mean, it's just a place to keep track of what movies you've watched, and you can rate them and review them and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's, you make lists. Social media for movies.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like those on tap like beer things where people like check in and say, hey, I'm drinking this. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. I don't hate that. If anything, it will help people like me who have a shit memory.
Right.
Yeah.
Remember what I thought.
Yeah. It's a, I like that. Let us know if you do, man. But that is Super Filmscast 64 for another week. Thanks again for KJ. Where can people find you in the world?
Yeah, you can find me at KJ Ellis on Twitter, Instagram, but I don't really do much gramming. That's KJ Ellis with ones as the L's. I also do a sports podcast called Too Much Dip. We do episodes on Monday and Thursday. Other than that, Partial Recall and Our Texas are still a thing, but kind of in hibernation for the time being.
All right. Awesome. Adam, thanks again. Hope you get out of that snowstorm. And we'll be back next week with some more fun and shenanigans on Super Filmscast 64. Take it easy.
And more next time on Super Filmscast 64!